This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast. Saturday night at Joe Fest. Long after the show floor closed, after Bob Breakin's My Palatoy story and RoboSkull panel, and during Saturday night karaoke, Brian Hickey, Patty Lennon, and myself found a small breakout room and sat down with Bob Breakin for a short conversation. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Bob's incredible. If you're unsure who he is, he was a lead designer at Palatoy from the 60s, starting with Action Man, all the way into the 80s when Hasbro bought and shut down Palatoy with Action Force, with Star Wars, and eventually the European G.I. Joe. He is directly responsible for what we called in the States the Kung Fu Grip. In the UK, it was just the gripping hand. He also designed the RoboSkull, the Triad Fighter, and so many other vehicles and figures in his time. His stamp on G.I. Joe, obviously European Action Force, but even here in the States, all the way back to 12-inch, is enormous. So we're all sleep-deprived, sober-deprived, and after buying toys all day, money-deprived. But it was a good conversation. I was honored to have it. And I hope you enjoy it. Thank you, Bob, for sitting down with us. Thank you, Patty. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Ben and Mark.
I think as well that we've got four like-minded guys around the table. We've all experienced an amazing weekend at Joe Fest. And for me personally, I think it's been mind-blowing. And I think we just let it flow. Let it flow and see what comes out, you know?
That's great with me. So we're at Joe Fest 2024, Augusta, Georgia. Patty Lennon. We have Bob Breakin, which is flooring, and we have Brian Hickey. Brian and Patty, obviously friends, and you guys have done this many times. But Bob, thank you for sitting down with me.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
It was something that I asked Ben and Mark and Brian and Patty if I should bring this so they could do something with you. And you guys have gratefully invited me to this. To start, though, because we can go long on how overwhelming Joe Fest is. My Palatoy story is incredible. I didn't know what to expect when I opened it. Their names were on it. I knew it was you. I backed it and I kind of walked away. I didn't really read. Sorry, I did not read the campaign because I just knew I wanted it because I knew who you were and I knew who they are. So I just jumped right in. So when I first opened it and the book starts in 1919 with the creation of Palatoy and is going decade by decade and is talking about the politics and how the politics of the time affected the toy industry, I slowed down and I started being very slow in my reading because it's a toy nerd dream. And I have no idea how you put this together, the amount of research.
Nor do I.
you were an employee of a company for
17 years.
17 years. Yeah. I've been an employee of a company for 24 years, and I have no desire to ever research the history of them. So you went all the way back to 1919. Where does this journey begin for you? Why the history of this company?
I've been doing talks to people about the history of the company, to local groups, you know, like history groups and all women groups. People kept saying, you ought to put this down as a book. They were just simple talks to start with. So I started writing things down. This was years ago, 12, maybe 15 years ago. I don't know when I started. It just started coming together, you know, and I thought I need to research a bit more. And I don't want it to just be a book of toys saying this is a toy, this is a toy, this is a toy. I wanted to sort of set it in some sort of context. So I started looking at the history behind the toys of that period. So I found out that the company was started by this guy called Alfred Edward Pallett, who was only 19. He was a typewriter salesman for a company in Leicester. Leicester is one of the central cities of England. He was their best salesman, actually, at 18. He had itchy feet, as we say, you know. He wanted to do something different. He tried to train as an accountant, but he failed his exams on that. But he still had these itchy feet. And at that time, plastics was just coming in, really. They started coming in at the end of the 19th century. Celluloid was a big plastic, one of the first, and another one called Bakelite. He saw some sort of something for the future in plastics, and so he decided to he'd get out of the sales. He wanted to be his own boss, basically. What he did, he went down to London, and on the way he bought a soap dish, one of those sort of clamshell dishes which you hold your soap in.
Right.
He took it down to Woolworths, the headquarters in London. He managed to get in to see the buyer. And he came out with a big order, but he had no place to do it, to make it. So he had to come back to Leicester and buy a place, which was an old lodging house. He had to defumigate it from all the bugs and things, you know, in those days. And he had to get some plastic. So he got lots of sheets of celluloid plastic, and he had to get some staff, and he had to get some presses. So he pulled it all together, and that's how he started.
The moxie, the balls of a 19-year-old is really the only place that could happen. Because at my age, I see all the roadblocks, and he saw only itchy feet.
Yeah.
That is incredible. One of the things you mentioned, celluloid and Bakelite, and one of the things that I've really loved about what you're writing is how you have described the process of the chemical process of these things, and then all of these inventions that had to happen, and how it changed, like how molds were made and the different plastics, and this plastic made kids sick and this one was okay. There was just so much. Like, I genuinely have to take notes when I read this book, because there's so much that I feel like I'm missing something every third page.
Yeah.
There is no end to the depth of this book for me.
I think it encouraged you to have a look, you know, I only briefly talk about the plastics, but it does sort of urge you to look more, you know, let's look into how this started, you know, this plastics industry.
And how it was interacting with the war and the 20s and everything's coming. You guys were coming out of World War One, and...
Yeah, it was very tough times in the country, yeah.
You know, we had the Roaring Twenties and and the stock market crash, and then World War II, and the perception of German engineering and products and imports versus British exports and imports, or not, I guess it wouldn't be imports for you guys, but just British made, like homemade stuff. I find it fascinating.
It's a good story. It's a story you can look into and find out more.
You also weave in, you know, your politics and who is running the government and how that impacted.
That's right, yeah.
Economics of the individual, but also like how we went from like kids just being in the wild to children needing toys and feeling like you had to buy your kids toys. You know, we think about it from our age as like it started in the 50s or 60s, but it started so much sooner than
that. That's right.
I remember when before I designed the book, I had to read the first draft, 95,000 words, first draft of the book. And like what you're saying there, the whole social and cultural history was a real eye-opener for me, you know, tracking that kind of change in consumers. Well, people weren't even consumers, you know, back in the early 20th century. They were just laborers trying to survive, and how that would become consumers as the decades rolled on because of all these cultural changes. You know, and that is fascinating. But then we really do get into looking at the toys that we love. I mean, that's a huge part of the book. I mean, it's really the main focus of the book. And diving into those different brands, the ones that I knew, like Star Wars, Action Man, Action Force. I mean, there was a lot of information in there that I didn't know about. But what really caught my imagination was learning about some of the girls' toys, like Pippa.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like Tressie, which I knew nothing of those until I was working on this book with Bob. One of the things that I love about, say, the Pippa doll story, Palitoy had a 6-inch action figure line for boys, and Bob had built a military Jeep for that, or designed a military Jeep for that, like a Land Rover style Jeep. Mm-hmm. But it didn't get produced for the boys line. It got repurposed, recolored, and moved into the Pippa line. You know, and we use a picture of that. There's a picture of that in the book, but it's an amazing vehicle. You know, brilliantly designed by Bob. It works great in the girls category, but you can totally see how it would have worked in the boys category too. And a personal goal for me is to pick up that Jeep and to color it up and populate it with G.I. Joes.
Well, with the rise of 6-inch, it's now the right scale again.
Perfect, yeah.
Speaking of that, like as I was reading the book, like sort of chapter by chapter, because they're in decades, the closer I get to the 60s, the more like,
you start excited.
Yeah. And I start reading faster, and then I have to slow myself down. You know, I'll skip a caption because I'm real close to, you know, 65, 66, and then I have to go back a couple pages and read the captions. And all of the photographs that are in there are crazy. Speaking of toy lines, a lot of the army men, and I can't, the brand is escaping me at the moment, but I have a friend who collects that. And so when that chapter came about, I'm taking pictures and I'm sending it. And I'm like, you should check this book out. He's like, holy, like, this is amazing. And yeah, so not just what I collect, not just learning about the girls' toys, but as I go through and I see things that other friends collect, because we all have something, I get to send them a quick picture of, hey, did you know about this book? There's a whole chapter on something that you love that's not G.I. Joe. And so it really is expanding not just the knowledge and the love, but also in our community where we can reach out to each other and be like, hey, I know you're into this, you know, the men, the planes, the cars, the little farmhouses and the animals and all the things that you guys have in there. It's really incredible.
Yeah. When I finished writing it and I was looking for someone to publish it, I was looking at different places. I was involved in the publication of a book on Action Man called The Action Man Dossier with somebody. I went to that company, but they weren't interested. And I tried other companies. And then I thought of Brian, because I know he designs great books. And so I sent him the manuscript to read. And I was a bit nervous that he's going to say, oh, that's a load of crap, you know. But I was pleasantly surprised when he said he really enjoyed reading it, you know. So I thought, great, you know, this is going to be good, you know. And I know he's going to design a great book to complement the story that I was trying to say. So, I was really pleased about that.
And a great book you did design, sir.
Thank you. Thanks, Bob. Well, you know, from my side of it, when I read that amazing first draft of the manuscript, I said, I'm going to have to really raise my game here, because this has got to reflect the effort that Bob has put in, because he's done such an amazing job. I'm going to have to do a great job on the design.
And he did.
And it came together brilliant. And obviously I'm so happy and proud of that book. But one of the first, I suppose, hurdles that we had to get over was to see what imagery we could get. And Bob had done an amazing job already pulling loads of imagery together. And he'd been in touch with Vectis, a big auction house in the UK, who specialise in auctions of vintage toys. And they'd given Bob permission to use photos from their website. So that was a big hurdle straight away that Bob had got us over that.
Oh, wow.
And then I started looking back at some of the more traditional photo libraries to see what I could find there. And between the two of us, we found loads of fantastic visual material that hasn't really been out there before in the public domain. And we were able to build this great asset library of images.
The real the thing we really, really got was when I got a call from, I mentioned in my talk today at Joe Fest about a guy called Miles Fletcher, who was the man who really turned what Castelloid was doing into Palitoy, basically. Because he introduced Tressie the doll and Tiny Tears the doll and Action Man. And I got a call from his son. He said, why is so-and-so. It was Bob Simpson called the father of Action Man, because my father was the one who introduced Action Man to England. And now his father had passed away in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
And I said, well, I need to know more about that, you know. And he said, well, my mother's still alive. She's 90. I said, well, I need to talk to her, you know, if she knows anything about that time. And he says, well, we could perhaps do a Zoom, you know, and talk to her. I said, well, I'd like to talk to her face-to-face, really. And he says, well, she lives in a place called Swansea, which is in Wales, a country, you know, next to England. I said, well, I'd like to go and, you know, I'd like to go and talk to her. When he said Swansea, I said, whereabouts? And he said, this village near Swansea. I said, well, this coming weekend, I'm going down to Swansea. So he rings his mother and said, would you talk to this Bob Breakin, you know, who used to be a designer at Palitoy? And she said, yes. So when I was down there with my wife, because her sister lives in Swansea, I went round to see her. And she had some fantastic material, didn't she, Brian?
Oh, wow. It was unbelievable. She was able to take from her kind of, you know, personal collection of photographs, photos of her husband Miles working in Palitoy that were actually photographed for a magazine that was published in, I think it was 1967, Bob? Annabelle, I think,
yeah,
was the
Annabelle
magazine.
It was called, yeah. 60, yeah, it'd been 60, yeah, it'd be 67, yeah. We'd taken a product called, you know, Bonanza that was on TV, and Hasbro did that. And we'd taken that from Hasbro and put it in the range.
Did you guys have Bonanza over there, or was it just
a toy
line?
Yeah, for a very short time, yeah. Yeah, yeah, very short time. Yeah, and there was great photographs of him and the sales director looking at all these products on the table.
Yeah, Action Man, Tiny Tears, Tressy.
All those products. So that was a great find, wasn't it?
And she had photos too of when he picked up the award. Was it the award for Action Man? It's Toy of the Year.
Picking up the award at the ceremony. There was photographs of that.
And you discussed that interview in the book several times.
I think I do, don't I? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She was able to bring a huge level of information that was a gap in the knowledge that she was able to fill. And it makes the whole story of Palitoy much more complete.
Yeah,
and Bob is the man who brought all that together. That information would not even be in the public domain if it wasn't for Bob's efforts getting out there and trying to find all that info.
And unfortunately, by the time we got the book out, she had passed away. Yeah, so she never got to see the book.
Well, that's a shame.
We sent some to her son, didn't we? So,
did he respond well to it?
Oh, yeah. He sent me a reply and said, this is a fantastic book. He says, really good.
I'm glad that it honored her memory.
Oh, it did. He was pleased about that. He said that to me, yeah.
That's good. So they got to have the moment of both of them posthumously being honored. That's good. I really liked it because the level of research that you had to do is staggering. You said it took 12 years. During your time there, I mean, you were holding on to things and keeping things instead of throwing them away. Or how do you have these many dates and all this information? And you must have been squirreling away information for decades, not just 12 years.
Well, probably. I didn't get into the toy collecting world until about 1997 or 8. I got a call from a guy who was an Action Man collector. And he was holding an exhibition, you know, whatever you call them, a show, an Action Man show. He was holding it down near Dave Tree, who lives down near Southampton. And it was in the Bovington Tank Museum. And he was holding his Action Man show in that museum.
Oh, wow.
So all the tables are surrounded by big tanks and everything, you know.
That's incredible.
And he rang me up and said, this is the first time I got involved. And he said, would you come down and talk to us, you know, about Action Man and history and everything? And I said, yeah, but I'd like to bring down a couple of colleagues. My boss, Bill Pugh, because he had just retired, and Brian Turner, who was a designer, worked alongside me. So the three of us went down and they entertained us, put us up for a couple of nights, and we gave talks on Action Man. And that was my first knowledge of the underworld of toy collecting.
You've been trapped ever since.
From there, I was being invited to others, you know. And that's when I started thinking, well, some of this needs to be recorded, you know. And that's when I started writing things and so forth. And then I got into not just Action Man, but the other toys and so forth. And it was just building up gradually. I put it down for a while, you know, and then picked it up again and started again and put it down. And then COVID came along, and in fact, I didn't do much through COVID. I had the time to do it, but then I picked it up and really got into it and started to put it together properly, you know. And then I finished it off. And then, as I say, I contacted Brian.
It was a real honor to be contacted and asked to participate. And, you know, without even thinking about it, I just said, yes, let's do this. And here we are now. The book is out. It's had a great reaction from readers. We've, here at Joe Fest this weekend, I've had people coming up to our table, me and Paddy, and, you know, talking about that they've read the book, My Palatoy Story. Some of them didn't know that Bob was here. So we were sending them down to the Skeletron booth where Bob was, to go down and you know, buy some of Bob's prints and get them signed and stuff. And Bob was sending guys up to us as well. So that's been a fantastic part of the show. We're getting to meet so many people, and for Bob getting the opportunity to, you know, talk to a lot of people who are really only just discovering his massive contribution to toys, both on the British side of the Atlantic and on the United States side too.
I don't know how it is for you guys, but for us, we are voracious. You know, just having everything that came out in the US is never enough, and we just continue to spill into other countries. It was the first time I saw something from another country. It was almost magical. Like the greens of Zed Force, and the Sea Lion is a beautiful figure, or a vehicle. The Triad Fighter is so much fun. The Triad Fighter is flying around the lobby here in the hands of a 12-year-old right now. You can thank Mr. Lennon for that.
He has my Triad Fighter.
Yeah, that Triad Fighter, I was thinking the space team needs a good vehicle. And it needs to have figures. You know, you need to get the figures in. So I was thinking, I want to get 3 figures in. Same with the Roboskull. I wanted to get 3 figures in. So I thought, well, let's have a mothership and 2 other ships that sort of lock onto the mothership. And then you've got 3 vehicles in one, you know. And I thought, well, let's have the wings so they can turn, so you can change it into different shapes. And that's how it worked out.
It's incredibly fun. And because it has so many different iterations of how you can place it, the play style never gets old.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I was hoping to do. Yeah, it worked out well.
You know, a design from 40 years ago in the hands of a today 12-year-old, he picked it up and immediately figured out how to work the wings and started running. You know, the room is filled with men in their late 30s to early 50s going, oh, that's fragile, be careful. Except for Patty and Brian and I, who are going, well, cheers, have fun, like run it hard. But, you know, all of your Action Force toys, they've been in the dirt. They've been in the snow. They've been in the bog, right?
Yeah.
So they're fine.
That's a really cool point there, because Action Force figures don't break.
Oh, here we go.
You know.
Here's half an hour of why Action Force is superior to G.I. Joe's. Brian, you can start now.
All right. We've started the clock. You got 30 minutes.
Try and keep it to 30 seconds, you know.
Those are the rebuttals.
No broken crotches in Action Force, no broken thumbs. Now, hey, we love G.I. Joe figures, okay, and people know we love them. But the Action Force, the way the plastic was chosen, you've got it as kind of a softer plastic on the hands that they can grip the weapons, but a more rigid kind of plastic on the torso and the legs, so they've got that solidity when they're standing up. And of course, we didn't think of that in those terms as kids. You just play with the stuff, and you just know that it does what it's supposed to do, but you don't know why. And of course, on this side of it now, you know, 40 years later, we start analysing that, and we see there was, you know, real design choices made that they were thinking of the robustness of the toys, that they would stand up to the wear and tear that kids would put them through, and that's why they're still really playable today.
They're very playable today. You know, for us, he's so into the O-ring, and even as much as he loves Star Wars, he's always sort of not been interested in 5POA figures. he's of an age and we have enough toy that he gets very early on to be an articulation snob. It is only now through getting into the Ewoks and droids and now Action Force that he's finding a love for 5POA. I never saw a 12-inch action figure until I was an adult. Like, my dad didn't have them. I never had them as kids. I don't have the uncle story. And it was him at shows with 12-inch G.I. Joe and Action Man collectors that saw a kid running around and said, "Come here. You ever see one of these? You want some clothes?" And the next thing I know, we have like 100 in our house. So I've always been of the mind of, if I'm not into this or he's not into that, it really only takes one or two things to knock us straight off the cliff. Stefan and you guys with the room cells and grabbing a couple vehicles. I think you grabbed a Q-Force vehicle and something else. I don't remember what else you grabbed.
Myself and the guys, the Irish guys and English guys that traveled together, arrived here on Thursday around, was it like half two?
About half one, two o'clock.
Yeah. Our friend Stephen Kelly, who came with us from Ireland, him and Stefan Brown arrived with four large suitcases full of Action Force. The idea was we were going to price it to sell, but we didn't want to bring any of it home with us. So Stefan and Stephen took the idea that they would sell it at more or less the prices they got it for in the UK. Obviously, things are cheaper in the UK. You know, you'll get a Panther for 40. You will get a Triad Fighter for 80, and so on. And Stephen opened one of his suitcases to show somebody his boxed escape armor. Within seconds, Jason, the place was swarmed. We had American collectors just overlooking us from the mezzanine, looking down and seeing that familiar red shadows color scheme and just hoofing it down the stairs to try to get their hands on the escape armor, because you don't see them often here and you definitely don't see them boxed. Within seconds, Stephen had three guys arguing over who was going to get that escape armor. It was kind of getting noisy in the lobby, so I think it was Rob offered and said, you can use my room for a quick impromptu room sale if you wish. So they bring the four suitcases up to the room, and it was swarmed for the next 2 hours. I'd say they sold a quarter of their stock in that two-hour session, and it was people spending thousands.
I did not spend thousands. But I walked in and I bought a handful of hardback Action Force annuals and the small comics because I love books and the artwork is incredible. The writers are all writers that I've known and loved for years and years. So I'm excited to dig in and read, not online, right, in my hand, while Alexander was running the room.
And picking the most expensive vehicles.
Of course. Of course. He has a real knack for choosing the most expensive of things. And that's the one that he loves.
Yeah. He got a very nice AF3, the diving platform. There was two there. One was, I believe one was 70 because it had very nice stickers. And one was 50. And he did at least go for the 50.
Well, he knows he's going to play with it. So the stickers can be a little rough because... And when I came back to the room with cash, he was like, "Oh, Patty bought it for me." And I was like, "Uh-uh, give him money."
and this, by the way, is like, what, 30 minutes after he had just received a complete Triad Fighter?
Correct.
So I know who the danger person is in our group. I'll not leave Lennon alone with Alexander for very long.
Because your son will eventually just become a Palatoy snob.
Well, I'll just end up broke.
Vintage RoboSkull next.
I would love a RoboSkull. And unfortunately, I did not get one when they were halfway reasonable. And now they're a mortgage. So we'll figure it out at some point. But I know we're going to get a Mark II. Actually, we're going to get two or three Mark IIs. The O-Ring Wolf Trooper, we have 14. And we have had our heads scanned and we have O-Ring heads. We have put our heads on Wolf Troopers. So we're now just waiting for the Mark II or for us to find and fund an OG Bob Breakin RoboSkull.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome. You get to fly it yourself.
That was the point of having a head sculpt, right? Bob, you now have one that we all get to fly for you, which is incredible. It's such a good head sculpt.
I send a load of photographs all around my head. And yeah, it looks quite good.
But you're part of the RoboSkull team today.
Well, yeah, I'm part of the team, but I haven't done much to... When Ben was looking at a name, he was saying, what are we going to call this new RoboSkull I'm doing, you know, sort of thing. And I said, why don't you just call it the RoboSkull Mark II? And he took that suggestion, so...
What was a good suggestion?
Great suggestion.
The best suggestion.
Well, you know, we do have Total RoboSkull. The book is going to be coming out later this year. Anyone who went all in on the RoboSkull Kickstarter is going to get a copy of that book. And of course, you can pre-order it from Skeletron from their website. But that book, Paddy interviewed Bob and the entire Skeletron team on that project. And got some great insights about the creation of the RoboSkull.
Yeah, so both RoboSkulls, because the first chapter is very focused on the vintage. And then we move into the subsequent chapters are all about the development and the design process of the Mark II. And that was actually quite interesting because obviously there's things similar to some of the documents you showed tonight, Bob, where you were looking at this skull thing. Should it have treads? Should it fly? Should it be a walker? Those same decisions were being taken with the RoboSkull Mark II as well. So it's like in the Total RoboSkull book, you'll see Alex Wu, who was doing a lot of the initial concepts, was also trying to figure out, well, how could we make this a walker? And how could we make this a tank as well? So I thought that was quite interesting that there was that crossover that Alex wouldn't have seen your original concept sketches. And he was trying to do the same iterations as well now, you know, 40 years later.
He was trying to do them organically without knowing that these others existed?
Yes, because I don't think he would have seen them because obviously he hasn't seen your presentation and he won't have seen that we have some of those sketches in the book from the vintage days. So apparently everybody wants a walking skull.
Or every designer wants to make a walking skull.
Or a skull tank.
Yeah. Some guys were doing that with the vintage RoboSkull that I designed. They were taking it and putting it on legs, and there's one that looked like an AT-AT. I've seen. I showed one in the presentation. You know, a track. There's certain ways you can put a skull, you know, on wheels, on tracks, on this and that. But I thought it had to be flying. You know, it had to go in the air. When I designed it, that's what I chose.
But what's amazing about it, because I remember seeing the RoboSkull for the first time as a kid. I think it was in a TV commercial. It looks like it was supposed to fly. Yeah. It doesn't look out of place in the air. It looks perfectly natural. The way you've crafted the whole ship with the engines on the back, the way the wings have the vertical takeoff and landing and can rotate, all of that. It's a magic piece of design.
One of the things that I am captivated by with that original RoboSkull and the way it was designed, that it wasn't designed with... I mean, it was designed, obviously, with a number of play features, but it was also designed with story features. So that third compartment was specifically all about mind control or instead of just being like another slot or a peg hole, like you could peg eight characters to the outside of it, you actually were looking at story as the play feature, not just the cockpit as the play feature. And I really find that very fun and compelling that as the designer, you're also thinking about the stories of how children are going to play.
Oh, yeah.
And baking that into the file card or the blueprints.
You got to get the children to play with the figures through the vehicles, you know, and through a story, like you say. So I had this story of the RoboSkull being, you know, this flying machine, and but they were capturing the Action Force guys and turning them into Red Shadows, you know. So that's why I put that in underneath as a sort of mind-changing device in there.
I had a lot of fun as a kid in the dirt. I can only imagine how much more fun I would have had chasing others. Actually, I do know I would never have been allowed that when I lived with my mother. But by the time she sent me to live with my dad, I would have been allowed a RoboSkull. It would have been too demonic for her, just right for him.
I still find it incredible to this day that they were allowed to release it. Like these days, if you put that to the market, like in a toy shop, somebody would complain.
Did you guys not have the Christian groups watchdogging every child decision?
What was the name of that woman who was the campaigner for television? Mary Whitehouse, who would campaign about, you know, the watershed that night. They couldn't show children anything too disturbing before 9 p.m. And simultaneously to this, there's kids running around with it. Almost human-sized red skull in their back gardens.
The Mark II is almost human-sized.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's enormous. But it's good. It's fantastic.
It is impressive at every angle and in every detail.
It's the detail they've put into it. And we didn't have time to put that sort of detail in and think. We didn't have much time to think it through, you know, because we had to get it out. So a lot of the thinking was done on the hoof and rushed, you know. But these guys at Skeletron, they've had time to think it through and put the detail in and add these little bits and glow in the dark eye, that, you know, and things like that. That's brilliant. They've turned the thing that changes the Action Force guys into Red Shadows, you know. They've made so much of it, made it look great, you know. We didn't have time to think that through and do that. And I think the people that have bought it, they've had patience for it to come out, but it's been worth it for the Skeletron crew to really make it a fabulous vehicle, you know.
You say you didn't have time to do it, but you had enough time to... Your job was to make a child obsessed for a year or two, but you made children obsessed for 40 years. So I don't, if you had had more time, like how much more of a problem would this have been? You would have got a knock on the door instead of a phone call.
yes, I suppose. Yeah, I was surprised when it was accepted anyway, when I could come up with it and sculpted the original one and took it to the new products committee. And I thought they're never going to accept this. It's a bit too crazy for them, you know. But when I came out of the meeting, I was so pleased, you know, that I got the idea through.
I know you said before, Bob, at that meeting you presented the Triad, the Sea Lion, the Roboskull.
Yeah, all three together, yeah.
And also the, was it the Space Force Troop Transporter?
Oh, yeah, we put that one in as well, yeah. But the market can only take so much, you know. And the marketing team, they're the people that decide what goes through. And so they shelved the troop transporter. We were hoping that it would come out in the next year, but because of all the trouble with General Mills and 1983 crash of the computer games, General Mills decided to get out of toys, and of course that troop transporter never got in, but we were hoping it would get in. It was another idea of mine to get more figures in, you know, so that the troop transporter could carry lots of figures. It was only a sketch that I did, as an idea, but we had a model maker, and I said to him, "Look, there's a sketch of this transporter for Red Shadows or Action Force or whatever." But he was the one who put a lot of work into the actual look of it. That was a guy called Kevin Heath. He was our model maker.
I mean, for people who maybe aren't familiar with that, we do have an image of it in the Total Action Force Battle Years book, which I think surfaced initially in a Palitoy trade catalogue. And I think it was David Tree kind of discovered it and kind of shared it online originally. But we were able to track down a kind of a really good quality of that image to include that. And since that book has come out, we've been continuing researching about Action Force. And I've had conversations with Graham Chadwick, whose dad, Neville Chadwick, worked with Palitoy as a photographer. And Graham was able to share with me images that show the complete vehicle, which we've only ever seen that kind of partial shot of the vehicle from the catalogue shot that Dave Tree was able to share. So it was great being able to see that, and hopefully one day we'll get that image out there in a book for Action Force fans to see.
And there's one collector, Matt Paul. He's working on that vehicle, with 3D printing and so forth. He's halfway through that.
Oh, that'll be lovely to see.
When it comes out, it'll be good.
Total Action Force Part 3, the addendums and things we learned.
He's just given us the title for the next book.
Push come to shove, I'm going to continue to beg you guys for books after like 13 and you have nothing more to write.
Another image we got of that Space Force troop transport was the sketches of how the action features would work.
Yes.
Because it had pop-out weaponry and so on.
Bob, in the aftermath of the My Palitoy Story project, gave me a box of, you know, old photos and transparencies. And we didn't have time to go through them because we did have a deadline, like a project deadline on My Palitoy Story. So, and we knew we had a huge library of assets to use anyway, more than we could even fit into the book. But as the project was winding up, I started to say, well, look, what have we got in this box? Is there anything here we can scan? And you know, I'll scan some stuff and I'll send it back to Bob and he'll have access to it. And once I started looking, I started to find, and Paddy was there too, just so much material that melted our heads. We just were like looking at stuff going, what? If only we'd have known this was here, this was, would have been in the book. And of course, one of the things that Paddy referred to there was a Polaroid of the design sketch, which showed some of the play features or intended play features for the Space Force troop transporter. Discovering that sort of, you know, those kind of design concepts that were sketched out. The sketch may not even exist anymore, but someone took a Polaroid of it, possibly, I'm guessing, Bob, for a presentation or something. And you have that in your own personal archive. So we'll have to, you know, so that's part of it, of an ongoing. Oh yeah, I'll have to show you that. It's but an ongoing project of kind of scanning all of that old material from Bob's collection and building up what we're, the working title is the Palitoy Image Archive. It includes concept sketches. It includes toy fair, toy show displays, you know, product photography. And it would be great one day to get that into a book. And I think just, you know, all pictures, no texts, because the pictures tell the story anyway. I think that would be lovely to share that.
So you don't need me.
Or Paddy.
You understand, I've told you before, you understand how insanely jealous I am of all of you archivists in this community that get to toil away hours upon hours doing the tedium of scanning and magnifying glass looking for the tiny details that everyone's going to miss. You guys are digging it out, finding it, bringing it to the rest of us. I don't know. I'm always enamored by it. I'm always jealous of it. I await the book. You just let me know when to hit the order button and I'm in.
We showed off actually a few more images from that box today in our panel at noon, where we had those four concepts that were on those transparencies. So there was the Red Shadows version of the satellite defense. There was the Z-Force version of the Hawk. That towable trailer, which came with like an armadillo-sized mini tank, which seemed to use, was kitbashed out of the satellite defense as well, with some wheel, with some tracks on it. And then that APC armored car concept that had TIE fighter parts on it.
Brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, and Bob remembers those items, but like we don't know what they were made for. Was it just like a session that the designers had where they were had a pile of Hasbro product and were like, what can we do with this? You know, what color schemes would it look nice in? And I just find that interesting that we nearly had a Z-Force Fang, which I think is, you know, amazing.
There's been some really good panels this weekend. You guys had one that you just mentioned. It was phenomenal. And then late at night, unfortunately, next to Lobby Swaps, which we can still hear through the walls, Bob, you had a great panel as well.
Thank you.
This is why we come and show up and leave the commerce floor. And you guys had a great conversation. You're sharing it now. But Bob, your panel, you kind of went through a very quick version of your book.
That's right. Yeah, it was just a sort of, yeah, as you say, a quick version of it. Yes. Yeah. If people want to read the book and get more detail, you know, buy the book. I could only talk for so long, but I think I got everything in that I wanted to say, and I think it told the story.
It was great, and the how you kind of dovetailed it back into sort of the modern toys that are being made now, inspired by your work from, you know, 40 plus years ago. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great. And it was really well received. So, you know, I think, and that it's worth acknowledging, like Bob got a standing ovation at the end of his presentation, which got quite emotional as well, because Bob also got inducted into the G.I. Joe kind of Hall of Fame here tonight.
So that was very cool.
Yeah, that was quite emotional. That was, yeah. I had two guys come up, ringing me up in my room saying, "You're coming down, Bob. You're coming down, Bob." And I said, "Well, I'm getting ready. And I come down out of the lift, and there's Brian and Ben, and they sort of guided me to the room. Didn't want me to escape. And I thought, what's going on here?
It was very nice to see that. And I'm sorry that you had to have armed guards lead you to the room.
Got my arm up my back. Come on, Bob. We're going into the room.
Don't shout. Just walk.
Just walking. I didn't know what was going on. But it was a nice surprise, that was. Especially when I'm 80 next week. So
next week?
Yeah. So it's a nice sort of nice birthday present, really, you know, to get that. It's fantastic.
You've still been running around this concrete and the hallways having pints. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
And dealing with all of us for all hours of the night while you're jet-lagged.
That's right. And people walking down the corridor and people saying, "Hi, Bob. Hi, Bob."
Oh, yeah. I've met these guys now a couple of years ago, and we've had mutual friends for longer than we've known each other. And so it's been lovely getting to know them. And as they've talked about you a lot, and then also, you know, I've known Ben for a number of years, and he talks about you a lot. There's never anything but the most glowing, sweetest, kindest things to be said. And we had never met. And you put out a book, like, what is that, like A5?
About that size, wasn't it? Yeah, about that size.
40, 60 pages. You put it out. There was a limited run. I reached out and I said, I'd love one.
Yeah.
And you said, all right, I'll get back with you with the price. And a couple of weeks go by and I get a package in the mail. And I felt very embarrassed because I never paid you. And so I reached out and I said, listen, you don't know me. However, you know, I'm friends with your friends.
Yeah.
You didn't charge me for this book. And so you sent me an invoice. I paid you and we had a nice conversation for about 30 minutes. Then I was like, I'm going to stop responding because I don't want to be a burden. But it was just sort of this weird validation of everything I've ever heard. And then you show up here and you're running around and drinking with us all. And the panel was a lot of fun. I was listening to the people around us that this... we're all just nerding out on the level of detail. And none of us are necessarily collecting Tressie, but we want to know about it. We want to know about Tiny Tears and everything else.
That's all part of the story, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's part of our story. You know, we have action figure because of Barbie. We have G.I. Joe because of Barbie.
Barbie started it, didn't it?
Right. But Barbie comes from somewhere. And the further back, you know, kids didn't have these kind of toys, and then suddenly there was a cultural, you have to have toys for your children. And in your book, there's a picture of, you know, a young girl holding her doll tight and a bag of clothes as they're getting ready to flee certain parts of England because of the bombings.
And you're
really struck by the importance of toys throughout more than my lifetime.
That's a powerful photo. In the book. That's one. I remember showing that to Bob, and he was like, "That's going in."
I mean, I'm tearing up thinking about it. It's a very powerful photo, but it's a powerful message about like what these things that we should have grown out of truly mean, and which is why we haven't grown out of them. Sorry to bring down the room.
I think we're all at that kind of point in the evening where. Today's been an exciting day. It's been an emotional day. But this whole event, like it was also, you know, yesterday as well was another amazing day and another late night. And then the build up to this event as well, you know, getting ready to travel, the travel itself, you know, the arriving here when we walked in the door on Thursday, there was already people here, like yourself included, Jason, in the lobby. And it was, even though most of the people we'd only connected with them online, it was like walking back into a room full of old friends. And it's just been an amazing experience for the last 72 hours. Incredible.
We were about 20 minutes away from here and Stephen and Stefan had arrived first. Stephen said, "Oh, you know, when you get in the door, you'll know you're here because Pat Stewart's sitting just inside the door." And we were joking in the car coming down. It was like, Pat is like a sphinx. You have to answer a riddle to get into Joe Fest.
Pat is too smart to answer his riddles. I don't know that I can.
Pat would be there like, and he'd be holding up like some accessory and he'd be like, "You have to identify this to get in."
You guys had a much longer trip than I had. You had to cross the whole Atlantic. And then you landed in Charlotte. You drove out here. And Bob, I don't know if you followed the same path.
No, I came with my son and we flew into Atlanta. So we had 2 days in Atlanta before driving down. And when I arrived, I thought, well, we're going to arrive. We're going to book in and everything. And as I walked in, there's these two guys. There's Ben. And it was like old friends coming together, you know? Yeah.
We look forward to this show all year, and we show up much earlier than is necessary. And so Thursday morning, I'm fresh, I'm ready. I come downstairs and I bring my tablet and I was going to do some writing and just kind of be productive. I get down there and there's already a couple people in the lobby waiting on the room. So I start talking and then more people show up and more people show up. And the next thing I know, I turn around and Brian's at the door and I see Patty and we're all just, and I don't stop. So it was, you know, 1:32 a.m. Thursday night. And then Friday, 6 a.m., we're unloading the trailer. We all load during the day. There's a custom class that I was unfortunately too antsy to sit through the whole thing. So I'll have to finish it at home.
We had our own customization class because Brian designed the Marauder boot.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and so we spent about, what, 6 hours helping Marauder and the Skeletron crew try to put together the boot you designed for them.
That was a long morning's work, yes. Yeah. So we showed up at 7 a.m. With the Marauder team and we just got stuck in. And can I just say, Marauder, John, and the guys, they are the best guys to hang out with. That crew are some of the soundest people I've ever met in my life. They didn't know me. They've never met me before, but I just felt like I was one of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had a great time, you know, and of course, they were so hospitable too. They let us hang out with them when they were on their break. They took us out for dinner. They're just really a super, super bunch of guys.
I don't know all of them. There's a couple that I know. I'm glad that you guys have had such a great time with them. It's not really a surprise, though. Ben doesn't seem to partner with... He's very smart at his partnerships. He brings in the right people at the right time. Anytime he is looking for someone, they seem to fit a certain kind of culture that, you know, the Marauder team is and you guys are. And
it's bringing the positive energy, bringing the good vibes, you know, bringing the mindset of like, yeah, we can do it. Whatever we need to do, we can just do it. You know, focusing on what we want to make happen rather than worrying about what might get in the way. And that's the energy that I'm feeling in the whole event this weekend. It's just really good vibes, great people, great experience. And I can't believe this is the first time I've been here. And it's, we're already making plans to come back in 2025. So okay. That's going to be exciting.
Well, then I guess I will absolutely see you then.
That is news to me, listener.
And this is probably my first and last visit. I promised the wife I'd get out of all this toy business when I was 80. So I'm going to go into retirement, I think.
A second one, huh?
It's never going to happen, he says. No, I'll still keep in touch with these guys. But if they want anything from me, I'll certainly provide it. And
We're already talking about some other stuff.
We are.
We won't get into now, but
I keep throwing ideas in, don't I?
Bob says he's retiring in it. He's the one asking Brian for work.
Keep it coming. Let's go.
But I don't think you'll see me in the States again. I might visit one or two in the UK, you know. So I've been really pleased that I came. I was in two minds whether to come, but my wife said, you got to go. You go. And so I said, well, I'm not going on my own. And she didn't want to come to this sort of thing. But then I talked to my son and he said, I'll come with your dad. And so he's been looking after me. But yes, I think he enjoyed the company with the Marauder crowd when we went out together. He enjoyed that. So, but he's not into toys. He's gone off to Charleston and Savannah to do a bit of touristing down there. And he's picking me up before we go home.
Your son said something very funny to me at the dinner with the Marauder guys. He's like, my birthday parties were the only ones where the guests left more presents than I got.
That is beautiful. Well, I'm glad your son came with you and that he left you in these mostly competent hands, sort of competent hands.
Oh, yeah.
Hands.
Well, I was happy that he was going to do his thing and have a look around and I knew I was going to be safe.
The funny thing is we've had a long handful of days and everything else. And so it's beyond 11 o'clock at night here. And so if it's beyond 11 here, that means that's 4 a.m. for you guys?
Our body is on 4 a.m., yeah.
We've been recording for an hour.
And I'm ready for bed.
Okay.
That's it. Interview over.
throw the mic on the ground.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.